Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
Hello and welcome to NBC, IGN's Nintendo podcast. I'm your host, Casey DeFreitas, and this week I'm joined by Per Schneider.
Hello.
Tom Marks.
Hello.
And Zach Ryan.
Another week and no Symphony of the Night on Switch.
What?
Yeah, that's right.
That's what you're
waiting
for?
Is that a thing?
Every week, I think maybe this week Symphony of the Night will come to Switch, and then every week it doesn't, and I'm sad about it.
Man, in 2020, that's a wild hill to die on.
I got my Castlevania shirt on. I forgot.
I actually just finished watching the Castlevania series. I watched all of it from start to finish again, and it's very, very good. And I'm very sad the fourth season isn't out yet.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, hey, guys. Welcome to the Nintendo show, where we talk about things besides Castlevania. But, Zach, good to know that that is your most anticipated game that has not been announced yet for the Nintendo Switch.
Of all
Someday.
Time.
Of Someday, all time. Baby.
Someday. But this week, we will be talking about how limited time events in games can sometimes make it fun and great and an amazing reason to come back. And other times, is it really just peer pressure, fear of missing out? That's kind of taking away the joy from some games and taking away your, I don't know, a ton free will to play what you want to play when you want to play it. That's a funny way to put it. But we'll also talk about how Famitsu Interviews revealed more details about Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition and some small news and our usual segments like Games Out This Week and what we're playing. So let's start it off. So this week, we all know that Animal Crossing's Museum Day Stamp Rally event has started. And this comes the question, do limited time events in games, are they good or are they bad? Are they fun? Are they stressful? Are they something in between? Do some games do that well? Do other games do it poorly? What do you think? What do you think about limited time events inside games? For example, Animal Crossing's Museum Day Stamp Rally, the Cherry Blossom DIY events, and all of those other things.
Well, the Animal Crossing events are really interesting to me too in this question specifically, because like generally I don't mind limited time events in games, but also I think of those in the context of online games or multiplayer games with big communities that you're interacting with other people. And so like the item that you got at that point is kind of like a badge of honor of like, I've been playing this long that I got to be at this event at this time, you know, with stuff like Monster Hunter or any MMO or just like League of Legends did a lot of like limited time events. Hearthstone does all these events like that type of thing. I never really minded. It's a little different. I don't mind it in Animal Crossing either, but it's a little different when it is like primarily a single player game. Obviously this is a similar thing of like, you can show off, you know, I'm sure there's somebody out there who's got that egg arch and they're like, you know, I was there for the Easter event with my egg arch, but like, it's less thrilling when it's something that you're just sort of building for your own collection. I think that's kind of my gut reaction.
So I think you're putting your finger on something there. I actually, Animal Crossing fundamentally is structured around the calendar year, right? There are events that you come back for, and some of the attraction is to come back and see what Christmas looks like or what Easter looks like in the game. So I actually really like that. I don't think they've yet fully connected the dots on how to let everybody in and celebrate. Like if you take like a Fortnite concert event, for example, it's this giant thing where everybody rallies around it. It's a big story online. And yeah, the egg stuff was pretty big around Animal Crossing too. If you were on social media, it was mostly people complaining that they got so many eggs. But there is kind of like the starting point of something that uses an event to create a connection between people. And I think ultimately those are the ones where that I like. You know, Splatoon was a great example of timed events too, right? Like having you break into teams and rally around these two kind of teams and align with one was really, really fun. From a, you know, working dad perspective, it's never awesome that they are time limited and I had to miss out on some of them because I was doing something else and, you know, was on a trip or spending time with the family. But I fundamentally like that stuff.
Yeah, I think the timed items, especially when it comes to like weapons and armor, are super cool. I think it's like, you know, when you see somebody in game and you see the gear that they've got because they did some timed event, and it shows like, oh, this person's really hardcore. They've got this super rare item from this timed event. Like, I think that's really, really interesting. It just doesn't necessarily fit with how I play games. You know, like, you know, typically like, I don't do a ton of jumping back into stuff after I've been away. And I thought that Animal Crossing would be the game that would like really ingratiate me into timed events, but you know, I haven't picked it up in weeks. And you know, the museum, if anything was going to get me back into it, it would have been the museum events. But you know, I think at this point it's just kind of like, well, I had my time with it. I, you know, I enjoyed it and now I'm onto other stuff. But I don't necessarily disagree with the idea that there, you know, there's definitely some kind of pressure or some sort of like gamer's anxiety around getting all of those specific items or things in that time frame. Like when March was ending and people were trying to catch who's that dumb fish from Animal Crossing? There was one fish that everybody was like
the coelacanth.
No, not the coelacanth. It was a different fish. Anyway. Everybody on my timeline was like, I've been fishing for 4 hours. I've spent 150 days
and
string fish.
Yes, that's the one.
Still haven't caught the string fish. And it was getting to the point where people are like, this event ends in 3 hours and I don't have a string fish. Like, what am I going to do? You know, like that. I also commiserate with that in that like I don't want to have to
cherry. The Cherry Blossoms event actually was a problem where people, you know, people felt like there was a task list of things that you needed to accomplish, but they couldn't because the recipes were released over time, right? So people are catching the cherry blossom petals and seeing other people craft things, but not being able to craft them themselves. So there was a little bit of that anxiety with it. But I think it really depends on what kind of gamer you are. I had no problem that I didn't get the, you know, the cherry blossom fan or something in time. You can come back next year, or you can time travel if you're evil, Biff.
Yeah,
if you're evil,
Biff. Yeah, I think it's definitely a completionist thing, right? Like, completionists need to have all that stuff in the time frame, and I've never been that. So
I used to be that, man. I used to be that so hard with games, where anytime a seasonal event would come out, I would need to hit every single thing. When I was really, really into Hearthstone, when Hearthstone first came out, I was like, I need to get every single card back that they release every single time they release a new card back. And then there was a card back you could only get if you, like, won a tournament in China or something like that. And I was like, oh. Well, okay, Perry, you know that feeling with Amiibo and those like special Monster Hunter Amiibo, right? Or like the Labo Joy-Con and stuff like that. And I think part of me sort of just like gave up. Like, I think I'm better for it, where I was just like, okay, you know, I don't need absolutely every one of those things. But I totally sympathize with the people that are like that, because I've been there, and it's a really like suffocating feeling, especially in the case of like the cherry blossom thing, where it's like you are playing every day, but like you just can't, like you're still not getting everything.
I think some other Nintendo games have been doing that recently as well, like Pokemon Sword and Shield has had limited time raids with special Pokemon, and I think it was New Year's they had shiny Magikarp raids, and they weren't that difficult to get, but I felt pressure to do nothing but look for shiny Magikarp raids for like an entire day. And it's like, this is all I can do for all day. All I can do is just get shiny Magikarp, because you're not guaranteed to get the right nature and ability and et cetera, et cetera. It's Pokemon. And shiny Pokemon are good for trade fodder. So I felt pressured to do nothing but that day, even though I wasn't necessarily enjoying doing nothing but that day.
And that's tough too, because New Year's is all about boozing and kissing. So you can't be worried about shiny Pokemon when you're supposed to be out there drinking booze and doing smooches.
Yeah, instead of boozing and kissing, I was catching shiny Magikarp, and I blame that on Pokemon.
What a disappointment to all the smoochers out there.
This podcast always makes me sad.
one of the things about those limited events though is like they are, like, they're fundamentally designed to get you to come back to the game, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's sort of three classes you can fall into, which is you're still playing the game and it's just a little bonus. You're not playing the game and it pulls you back in, or you're not playing the game and you ignore it and miss out. And like, right, like Zach waving enthusiastically. I think that there's like, you know, if you're in one of those categories, like whatever category you're in, there's kind of nothing you can do about it. Like, you're just sort of like going to be one of those people or not, and you're going to either miss it or you're not. Like, well, okay.
Yeah, but there's also the surprise factor, and that ultimately I think Animal Crossing, if you are playing it casually and you sign in and the seasons have changed, it's just really cool to like not know this was going to happen. Actually, I didn't pay attention, like the stamp rally surprised me. It's not great. It's not a very exciting event. You literally walk through your museum looking for a pedestal and go, and that's it. But it was still cool to come in and then hear that there is an event going on and then experiencing it for the first time. So I really like that element, the surprise element, rather than the gotta set my clock to be somewhere element, you know.
Per, what's going on with your setup? I feel like you've really upgraded your setup. You look different.
I swung, so I was I think I was in my library before. And I moved, this is my little office space. And the background is really, really boring. So I turned around the table and you can see just some junk in the back.
Great.
Ah, junk.
That's it.
Good.
I have X-Wing and Armada ships.
Nice.
Tom mentioned collecting Amiibo or controllers, and there may be something going on there with those ships too.
One, and viewers to NVC can see that I'm still collecting doors. I have several doors on display here, so
it's a little bit like a Monsters Inc. waiting room or something.
Oh yeah.
sorry to derail the conversation. Please continue.
No, you're fine. Look, I did want to,
I can bring it back to Nintendo. It's Outrider.
Nice.
Shadows of the Empire.
That's right.
For our listeners, we're just looking at stuff right now. Come pop over to the video to see the things that we're all looking at.
Kids. Anyway.
But yeah, I guess I just wanted to bring up some other Nintendo games that have featured time events in the past, and if you thought they did a good, poor, or fine job at it. So Mario Kart 8 Deluxe had a limited time online tournaments, ARMS had Party Crashes, Splatoon 2 had Splatfests, Mario Tennis Aces had limited time online challenges with exclusive costume unlocks, and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate has had Spirit Board challenges, which I personally didn't really care that much about.
Well, I think the most impactful one, I think, was the Splatoon one for me still.
Yeah, I think Splatoon. I really like the Mario Kart challenges as well, or the online tournaments there.
Really well.
One of the doors opened in Zach's apartment. Yeah. Sucked out the internet for a second.
Oh no!
Did you guys miss what I said? I said that I was into the Mario Kart online tournaments as well. I thought those were really cool too.
Yep.
Well, the Splatfests are great because they're like, they're not just an event, right? They're like, they get you involved. They give you a stake in it. They make you decide.
They were so smart, and they always use silly little topics to get you interested. And so there was that banter on social media before. It's like the ketchup versus mayo thing, right? Mayo, yeah. Always.
But, I agree. It's mayo.
Where the other games did a good job at creating some sort of online focused event, but it didn't have that same kind of oomph for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think my ideal online limited time events, not even online, but just limited time events, are ones that require you to do a specific thing, but doesn't involve any RNG or grinding. Like you can just do the thing a set amount of times and you're guaranteed to be done with it at the end. Because things like, for example, like the Magikarp grinding, like you're not guaranteed to get the shiny Magikarp every single time. So you are encouraged to continuously do it. And I think games that like the Stringfish, for example, like you can't just like set out to do it and do it. You have to be lucky. And having limited time events that require you to be lucky can be kind of frustrating.
Yeah,
okay, that's fair. You had a month.
True. True. But for all the procrastinators in the world, you had like what, like 2 days? Like, come on.
I think that's what happened there. It's like on the last day, we also promoted, hey, it's the last day for you to catch this fish. And then people go a little nuts, right? And then they get frustrated that not every fish that appears in the mountainous rivers is the one they're looking for.
You're totally right, Pear, because you know, like a limited time event that lasts for 2 weeks is like maybe more stressful but like nobody really faults Animal Crossing for having different bugs or
fish cycle out,
right? Like that part of the game is essentially a limited time event in the same way, just the time scale is much, much longer. And it just sort of is like less pressured and it's cool, and it adds to that calendar aspect of the game rather than feeling like you're gonna miss out on something until those last 2 days.
And it teaches, basically, it's just a lesson in procrastination. Don't do it, and then you won't be stressed out.
Yeah. I also think, you know, that, and that's where Animal Crossing needs to evolve a little bit. If the borders were removed where you can visit somebody else's island that you don't 100% know, you know, like if you could visit somebody in Australia or around the world, you could pick a country in the world and go to somebody's town. A lot of those time restrictions would be eased a little bit, at least. But they do have the Dodo tickets and all that kind of stuff. So,
well,
what is it called? The Nook ticket.
Yeah. And let's not forget about the opposite of this style event. Take, for instance, a game like Chrono Trigger, which is an unlimited timed event.
So bad. Well, there are games like, do you remember Night? Where if you played it on Christmas, you got Christmas nights?
Yeah, I mean, Arkham does that too, right? Where like different holidays and stuff, they show up with different, you know, text and voice options and stuff like that. It's cool.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
I liked my joke.
I liked it too. It was a good joke. I liked it.
Probably one of the worst jokes we've had.
Yeah, that's okay.
So we were just talking about limited time events in games and if they are fun or stressful or maybe a little bit of both. Let us know how you feel in the comments. And next up, we will be talking about Fumitsu Interview, A Famitsu interview has revealed more details about Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition. I started hearing an echo, so I got thrown off.
It's just Zach.
Zach being an echo. No. But there's an interview with Monolith Soft president Tetsuya Takahashi, and they revealed a bunch more information about Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition. Zach, I saw that you preloaded this game.
I did. So
can you say that you're now thoroughly on the hype train? Are you excited?
Cautiously optimistic, I think, is okay. How I would describe my feelings towards Xenoblade Chronicles. You know, I hear that, obviously, we've talked about this to death on this show. I played about 10 hours of Chronicles 2. Wasn't for me, not a big fan. But everybody that's on Twitter and likes to give me a bunch of guff about having not played the first one says that the first one is much better and that I will love it because I like a good JRPG. The idea that they're adding an expansion that is, you know, 10 to 12 hours longer than what is already probably a 78-hour RPG is a little concerning to me because it's already a pretty big time investment. But yeah, I you know, I have it preloaded. I'm going to get out there and give it my old best shot and see how it goes.
All right. So the expansion that Zach mentioned is called Future Connected, and it's kind of like an epilogue story that takes place a year after the events of the main original game. And Takahashi said it takes about 10 to 12 hours, but it could be closer to 20 if you do all of the side content. And you can also do the epilogue without finishing the original game. You can do it totally separately. You cannot do it at all. Up to you. And it also includes a new battle system as well.
I was surprised by that. I thought this was going to be like a true epilogue of like 2 hours where you get to explore, you know, some of the aftermath. But that's a pretty sizable upgrade to the original game to include all that. It's like, you know, rolling in a torna basically into the main game. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah.
It's like, can we just call it what it is? It's a new game. Like,
oh yeah,
this is the crazy thing to me about JRPG timescales is if you announced a game that was 10 to 20 hours with a new battle system for a series that was not a JRPG, that would just be called a video game. In this case, it's like an expansion as part of a remaster. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's very good.
You know, they said if they had made it a paid DLC edition, it would have been even longer and bigger.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But no, they're just adding it in. They also said that Takahashi felt bad about the character graphics in the original, and so they went back and considerably improved it in the Definitive Edition, which we've seen from a lot of the trailers so far. And we also have learned recently that they went back in and redid a lot of the lip syncing to make that better as well. The music isn't re-recorded with an orchestra, but it has been rearranged and improved. And yeah, they've just done a lot of different improvements and changes in this game. I guess not so many changes that it would be considered a remake. It is definitely still a remaster, but I think it is improved enough and has enough additional content to make it worth playing. What are you laughing at, Zach?
I just remembered how in the second game you play as a guy who's got a sexy lady for a sword. God damn, that game is dumb.
That is like
Zach,
a pretty
where
common...
can people find you?
I feel like that's a pretty common anime trope where weapons are also people.
Yeah,
like Soul Eater is one of them. I'm sure there's a bunch of more that I'm just like not thinking of right now.
Yeah, and I guess it's always like a pretty common anime trope to give the weapon that's also a person just impossible physical features. I'll leave it at that.
But, yeah, there's a new anime called Infinite Dendrogram. They do the same thing. There's a
Skyward Sword has a lady.
Oh, you're right. It's just a trope. It's just a normal. Just accept this as normal now. And
that new game coming out, Boyfriend Dungeon, which is literally all about swords that turn into people.
And don't forget about the new game coming this fall. It's called Booby Sword. That's about a sword with boobs.
Nope. Not it.
Nope. Don't talk about Fee. That was her name, right? The Skyward Fee. Sword?
Yeah.
Sorry, I gotta stop. I got about five more lined up that I'm just not going to say.
We'll imagine them for you. Mm-hmm. Sounds good. But yeah, we'll probably learn more once that full interview is released. These were just a few tidbits taken out in advance. So I don't know. Look out for that on IGN.com sometime in the near future. But now let's move on to some small news. We actually have quite a few small news stories, including, I just wanted to include this. So they released a, there's a new Clubhouse Games 51 Worldwide Classics trailer. And it showed off all 51 games in a 6-minute trailer, and it's split into different categories like board game, card game, sports games, variety games, single player games. And it looks pretty cool. And I'm actually kind of looking forward to this because you can just, like, for example, like play Manjala just with the touchscreen on the Switch. Like, you put it on a tabletop and you like move around the beads with your, with the touchscreen with another person playing next to you. So it looks like just a collection of a bunch of board games in the Switch. So you don't have to buy a bunch of different board games.
This and is one of those things where it could blow up to be this ginormous seller for them. You know, once in a while, Nintendo has a title where we go like, really, is that going to do well? And then it's like,
yo, I'm hyped for this game.
Yeah.
Like, weirdly so. Like, I don't know why specifically, but like, from what they've shown off, they look well made. Like, each of these looks well made, and there are a lot of cool things, and it's a lot in one package. And it's like, cool, man. Like, this will be a great little thing to have on like trips, you know, family trips or family events, hanging out with little cousins or that sort of thing. Like, I'm totally on board with this.
Mm-hmm. And you can also, you can even line up multiple Switch consoles for games like slot cars, like you do in Super Mario Party. It supports local play for card games, and up to four people can play with just one copy of the game.
That's, and it
includes, yeah, it sounds awesome. And it also includes the Hanafuda card games, which I'm pretty sure Nintendo previously made.
I mean, obviously they didn't predict this, but it's a good title for the summer months where people go on vacations and on road trips and stuff, right? That would have been good, that you can bring all these games easily with you. Now that we're all stuck at home, I kind of have a lot of those games. In physical form, everybody's got a deck of cards at home, right? So it's a little bit less, not that you can bring a deck of cards with you, but like the convenience factor, I think it'll be nice to have next year when we actually can leave the house again.
I mean, I'm still looking forward to it because I don't have a ton of board games and things like that at home. I mean, I have a deck of cards, but there's definitely a lot of games in this trailer that showed off that I don't have. So maybe I can recruit my roommate and we can play some three-player games. Also, there are more NES and SNES games announced for Switch Online. Of course, right after we spent some time ragging on it last week with Seth Macy and Janet Garcia. But NES is getting Rygar and SNES is getting Wild Guns, Panel Dupont, and Operation Logic Bomb. And they are available on Switch Online now. And these are the first editions of Switch Online since February.
It's been a while. Well, Panel Dupont is great. You guys should play it. Obviously, you know, we've seen Western versions. We've seen it westernized as Tetris Attack. And, you know, Pokemon Puzzle League was a spinoff from Panel Dupont as well. But that was a big Nintendo puzzle series in Japan before, you know, it got changed and westernized and Pokemonified. Panel Dupont is great. It's nobody will remember the characters, and you know, and the music might not stick with you, but the core gameplay is just so good. So I'm happy that we have the Japanese version here, finally.
I also think that Rygar is an underrated NES game. I think that's a kick-ass game that not a lot of people talk about when they talk about, you know, the pantheon of NES games. But Rygar is very fun.
That's cool.
Fair. Do you disagree? Do you disagree about Rygar?
Rygar is fine.
There it is.
I'm not going to lie. Until you said that Panel Dupont was basically like Pokemon Puzzle League, I hadn't heard of any of these, and I was very like, I was initially underwhelmed, but now I'm excited to play that one.
Yeah, it's not just like it. It's literally it, right?
It's literally Pokemon Puzzle League.
I mean,
but
Puzzle League's a good game.
For the audio listeners, I'm holding up my screen, and we're seeing a game that looks exactly like Pokemon Puzzle League.
And you're playing a Strawberry Shortcake too. That's nice.
It definitely has that vibe. I agree with you.
But does it have a MIDI version of the Road to Viridian City theme song to get stuck in my head for literally two decades?
No, but I feel like that's always playing in your head, so you don't even need that anymore.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Also,
we ever have to file a police report about you, we'll say that was one of the causes. Sorry, also, Casey, go ahead.
No worries. Also, in small news, we have finally gotten a North American release date for Story of Seasons, Friends of Mineral Town. It's coming out on July 14th, and it was previously announced that it's launching in Europe and Australia in July 10th. And these are remakes of Harvest Moon, Friends of Mineral Town, and Harvest Moon, More Friends of Mineral Town, and it follows the story of both of those games. So yeah, again, some Harvest Moon. It's not Rune Factory 5, but, you know, I guess you don't need to tame monsters and go out in dungeons and attack things to have fun. I'm kidding.
This is definitely one of those things where I don't understand the, like, licensing that has gone into this.
Oh yeah, I have no idea. Zero.
Like, because I knew Story of Seasons, Harvest Moon turned into Story of Seasons, but then they're also making Harvest Moon games, but I didn't realize that Story of Seasons could remake a Harvest Moon game. Like, that is a very weird thing to me. Like, I just don't know how that works.
Okay, it's because they own the game code. The thing you got to free yourself from is to think that the games were always called Harvest Moon. In Japan, the games were always called Bokujo Monogatari, which means a farm story or farm tale. And so that's the original game they're remaking. Then not actually, like, the U.S. title Harvest Moon was one that Natsume applied to that franchise. Just like Natsume published Pokeon Rocky, and that series is called Kiki Kaikai in Japan. So same thing. Now, the ugly split between the two, that's what got things confusing, where the, you know, Natsume owning the Harvest Moon name hired what I feel like is a lesser developer to continue the franchise. Like, they should have found somebody who's as great as the people behind Story of Seasons.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah,
that really made my head hurt.
Sorry, I like those games.
Some other news. We previously covered that Gamescom was canceled, but digital Gamescom dates have been revealed. They will take place between August 27th and 30th and promises world premieres, news, games, and events, and include shows like Opening Night Live, Awesome Indies, in the Gamescom Daily Show, and Gamescom Studio, which is supposed to feature developer interviews. So I guess if you weren't actually going to the show, you should expect similar content that you would have been getting otherwise, especially on IGN.com.
That's right. We're a partner this year as well, so we were going to have a studio space on the Gamescom show floor. Since it's now a digital event, we have a studio space right here in our living rooms. And we'll be running programming with Gamescom and on our own during those days. So, and we'll be carrying Opening Night Live and other programming.
Awesome. Very cool. So that was about, yeah, are you sad?
I just said, do you guys remember events? You remember going to events and stuff? That was nice.
I had so many things that I was going to do this year, and I'm not doing any of it, and I'm very upset.
Yeah.
Was one of those things Gamescom?
I assume so, and one of those things was also Pokemon World Championships in London. I've never been to London.
Oh, man.
But no, beautiful. I'm still never going to have been to London. But that's okay. There's always next year.
Plan it for next year. It's a great city.
Who knows? Who knows if next year is also canceled? Anyway. At least we have games coming out this week, like we do every week.
This thing got really sad real quick.
I'm sorry.
No, it's my fault. I will make sure to get a 12-pack of Kolsch to drink at my home studio during Gamescom.
I'm sure BevMo delivers in San Francisco.
They do.
You got to use another service for that. But.
So I couldn't get them to deliver. I had to get them. They had to ship to me. And I guess they were having a buy one, get one for 1 cent sale. And I guess I put so much stuff in my cart. A notification popped up. It was like, looks like you're having a party. Do you need a coordinator? And I was like, gosh,
no,
offense taken.
Thank you. Oh, man. Well, they sell Reisdorf Coach. So you can get one of the actual Cologne. They have American ones.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Fort Point. Makes
Four
a
points good. Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Anyway, let's continue with Nintendo voice chat. Even though I would like a beer voice chat, let's do a spinoff one day. Anyway, Outlast.
Water.
I mean, I'm also drinking water, but you know, sometimes. Last week, we did miss one game, and it was Hatsune Miku Project Diva Mega Mix out on the 15th for $39. Look, Hatsune Miku is a huge thing, and it's the first time she's been on Nintendo Switch, if you don't count the Just Dance games, because you can dance to some Hatsune Miku songs on Just Dance. But this is a collection of more than 100 songs. Some of them are new. A lot of them are old from the past decade of Hatsune Miku songs. And it's just a pleasant Vocaloid rhythm game. So if you're into that, there you go.
Are these Casey games? Do you play?
I have never played a Hatsune Miku game. I did accidentally wander into a Hatsune Miku festival in a park in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. But yeah, I haven't played it yet.
Classic Miku Fest. Yeah, Michael Hyam, who works at GameSpot, has been posting gameplay clips of this Hatsune Miku game, and it looks fun as hell. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Yeah. Those are jams coming out of there, and it's, you know, it's got a similar principle as DDR. Like, you're using the directional buttons to, you know, input rhythmically, and like, yeah, it looks fun. And I've not played a rhythm game since oh god, what was it that came to the Switch?
It's been a lot.
Yeah, it's the one that everybody loves that I played for like 1,000 hours, and now I don't remember the name. Anyway, this Miku
good chat, Zach.
Yeah, I know. That's okay.
Hyrule? Sorry, keep going.
Cadence of Hyrule? No, it's okay. Bye, Zach. I do like dancing to Miku and Just Dance, but that's it. I also, some of you have been able to play with the Wonderful 101 Remastered.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes? Mm-hmm. Cool. Because that is out on the 19th for $40. It is a superhero action game from Platinum. Originals for the Wii U, we've been talking about a bit, so you probably know all the background information. Our reviewer, Mitchell Sutzman, gave it a 9 out of 10. And he said, as a remaster, it may disappoint, but the Wonderful 101 Remastered is still the best way to play this Wii U classic. And he really liked it and called it amazing. What do you guys think?
Yeah, that game is still fun as hell. And I'm a Platinum fan. I really like a lot of what Platinum does. I think their kind of over-the-top action is both fun to play and kind of a spectacle to behold. And this game delivers that in a way that none of their other games do, in that it's so colorful and cartoony. And from level to level, you're doing, you know, different kinds of activities, be it, you know, the standard exploration or the battling, or like there's levels that are just straight up shooter levels. And you're constantly switching back and forth between these kinds of gameplay for boss fights that like are amazing. The boss fights are so good. But I'm just like stoked that this game has an opportunity to find a new audience. I think, you know, as a second party developer on Wii U, Platinum kind of painted themselves into a corner with this game, because, you know, only 13 million units in distribution means that you've got a really limited audience to buy in on a game like this that's already pretty niche. So bringing this out again and allowing a new audience to experience this game and get a taste of what it is really cool, because it is a super, super fun game. And this is a very polished version of Wonderful 101.
I like everything about it except for playing it.
What does that even mean?
I got to be honest. It's just not my kind of game. Really like the idea, the concept. It's so playful. You know, the hero design and how they create weapons and all that is really cool. But I don't know. There was just something, and I haven't played the Switch version. I played the original. I just couldn't get into it. It was just one of those games where I'm like, man, I really want to like it because my coworkers and friends really like it. Couldn't get into it. It happens.
What if they added Picross into the mix? If it was like a shooter level and then a Picross level and then an action adventure level.
Does our review scale go to 11?
Oh, and then the next level would be like a Kulsh level. It was just a fair game.
There is a guy. Isn't there a hero that's just like a beer? He's got like a beer glass on his head.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I will say about this, because we have talked about it already, but like this is a really good example to me of Wii U ports of games that take advantage of the gamepad screen working without it. Mm-hmm. And I'm really like, it's very encouraging to see this, because it really doesn't suffer too much with losing that functionality and losing that screen. And it gives me hope for the future of other Wii U games potentially getting ports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the way that they've integrated the drawing feature on the right stick is really smart and doesn't feel out of place when you're playing it because I full disclosure, like, I've been playing it on PlayStation 4. I haven't played it on Switch. So it doesn't feel, you know, it doesn't feel like a tack on. It doesn't feel like it's like a means to an end. It really feels like this game was developed with a right stick in mind. Whereas on the Wii U, you were drawing out the shapes to you know, construct a sword or the whip or the gloves or whatever. But yeah.
So our reviewer Mitchell really likes it. Obviously, he's a huge Platinum fan as well, and he really likes skill games and combo based games. So he said the Switch version has some performance issues. So just be aware of that.
Even in his review, you know, when he flips over to talk about the Switch, like, you can immediately see the difference in graphical fidelity. Like, it looks much, much better on the PlayStation 4, but it's still, you know, still a pretty fun game.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And also out this week, we have two golf games, both for $20. We have Golf With Your Friends and What the Golf. Mm-hmm. Tom, if you could only get one golf game this week, which one would you recommend most?
Well, that question is, do you have friends?
Yeah. I played them both as well.
Yeah. Golf With Your Friends is a really, really fun mini golf game, but I think it really doesn't hold up as well on your own. It's in the title. It is explicitly made for multiplayer, and it does that extremely well. Whereas What the Golf is more like a puzzle game, and it's really, really fun and silly, but it is a solo game. So if you're not going to be playing this with other people, then totally go for What the Golf. But Golf With Your Friends is a lot of fun if you have other people who have also bought it and are can play online with you.
Yeah, interestingly, like, Golf with Your Friends is set up to be super easy to join, like, jump in. Like, the entire interface is really designed around you getting the game going really fast. It's pretty whimsical too. So it's not just a straight up mini golf game. It's got like a Haunted Mansion level, and, you know, like, the controls are pretty simple. They're, you know, you actually have full control over your power meter, and you can just set it to whatever power hits you want, versus, like, you know, some of the traditional golf games that have those more timed elements to hitting a button right when, you know, an indicator flashes or something. So it's very simple. So it's all about figuring out how to bounce the shots off the walls and take shortcuts and stuff. And so, yeah, I've only played it single player so far. I want to get it going with the kids here. I'm digging it. What the Golf is really interesting because it is much more, it's just much more silly and action-y. The one bummer is it's $20. And, you know, it's basically that same price would have bought you 2 months of subscription to Apple Arcade, and you can play it over there. It's a little high in price. But whether you play it on mobile or on the Switch, I'm sure the experience is great.
Yeah, I played a lot of What the Golf on mobile and had a really great time. But I completely agree with you. $20 is just too steep for that game. I would wait.
It is fun. It is very funny, though. It's
a super funny game. And it does like, it has somewhat of a gimmicky kind of twist that is very, very funny in practice. And you know, I would just wait for it to hit a sale on the eShop or something, because it's a great game for $5. It's a pretty good game for $10. $20 is just too steep for that game, I think. Yeah. But it's also a very long game, though. I will say that, like, there is a ton of different challenges and objectives and replayability in What the Golf.
Yep.
Oof. My screen just went black for a second, and I got very scared. But it is back, and I am back. And there are still two other games coming out this week. But so real quick, Real Mist Masterpiece Edition is coming out on the 21st for $20. And this is Tom, you seemed incredulous about this announcement.
Not incredulous, just shocked. Mist is coming out on Switch is, like, not a headline I ever thought I would be seeing, right? Like, for anyone who doesn't know, this is a 1995 point-and-click adventure puzzle game that essentially defined a genre in a large way. And Real Mist is the slightly later updated version that made everything 3D instead of 2D, and then Masterpiece Edition is like the remastered version of that from 2014. And so it's like, this is a bunch of different layers of this game coming to getting updated, but basically this is like the best version of Myst you can find, and it's just so weird and cool that it's coming to Switch, and it's like still a great game. So, like, if you've never played it and you've heard the name Myst, like, you should definitely check this out. I don't know about the Switch port yet, but like, it's so weird and cool that we can recommend this game to Switch owners.
Yeah, somebody out there is trying to make Myst a thing in a big way right now. You know, we've got this Myst port. We heard about a Myst TV show that's coming. Like, you know, somebody out there is thinking about Myst in a way that hasn't been thought about in about 25 years. So,
well, it's an early example of a mainstream PC game, right? Like, mm-hmm. parents played Myst. It really mm-hmm. broke out of the kind of niche PC market of the time.
Speaking from personal experience, this is one of the games that got me into gaming because my mom played it and she would play it with me on her lap and we would just do the puzzles and like I'd just watch. But like obviously very young me because I was at the time this came out 4. But like this was a formative game for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, Tom's younger brother's name is Myst after this game, actually. Myst Marks.
That's so. Not true.
Mom loved it.
His middle name is also an R, so it's Mr. Marks.
All right, last game coming out this week that we wanted to mention is Monster Prom XXL out on the 21st for $16, and it is a multiplayer monster dating sim where you have to get a date to prom in a school full of monster people, and it includes all of the DLC. This is a game that Miranda, Janet, and I wanted to stream, and then we never did, so maybe we'll do it eventually sometime, maybe. Now that it's out on the Switch. But it looks like just a really cute game to play with people. Now, on to games that we're actually playing right now. What are you playing?
I didn't want to interrupt you because there are a couple of other games coming out this week that I'm actually playing. So there's Red Wings, Aces of Sky. I think that's out, by the time that we're posting this. It's $18. It's kind of like Pilot Wings with guns. It's like it's kind of an air combat dogfight game with, you know, your typical kind of red Baron, pardon my German, but with like Fokkers and airplanes like that. So you get triplanes and biplane combat, which is really cool. It's not a historically accurate sim or anything. Like, you're flying through the sky and blowing up giant blimps with angry faces on them and flying through rings to refuel and stuff, but it's really well made. It's got these cartoonish graphics, runs really smoothly. I started playing. I just wanted to play a little bit. I kept on going. It's fun. You play. You can also do co-op together. Definitely, if you're looking for a cool flying game, this is one to play for sure. Digging that one. There are a couple other games that are one is out this week that's called Cannibal Cuisine. I reserve my judgment on that one because it is a multiplayer game and I've only played it single player, but it's basically Overcooked with cannibals. So
like Overcooked with violence, right?
Yeah. Basically, in addition to get the meat part of your, in order to get the meat part of your ingredient, you got to kill some tourists. And they're like these cartoony little people. You got to hit them. And then you got to take the steaks from the tourists. And then you got to pair them with stuff. And it's like a 4-player party game where you're all playing together up to 4 players, trying to create these recipes for, some evil god that likes to eat that sort of stuff.
Nothing can be pure in this world where somebody looked at Overcooked and was like, what if this, but with death?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is kind of silly, cartoonish, South Park looking death. It's got potential. I like what I've seen. But my my favorite game this week is Hunt Down. Have you guys heard of that one?
Mm. Yeah, we mentioned that last week on the show briefly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Yeah, if you guys already talked about it.
No. Go ahead. None of us have played it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's $20. It's basically Contra. You know, it's like a better looking Contra game with like deliberately, 16-bit art, but it is more detailed than a lot of the games from that age. Runs at 60 frames per second, really big explosions, fun little elements. I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah. Do you remember Blackthorn, where in order to dodge bullets, you could kind of go into the background? It's got that sort of element where
That's
you can
cool.
take cover, or you can go into a doorway, wait for people to shoot, then pop out and get them. And you've got, you can pull giant guns off the street or off your enemies. It's really well done. It's got this kind of... you know, cyberpunk look to it with, you know, kind of the prerequisite Blade Runner style with lots of Japanese characters everywhere and stuff. It's a really well-made game. I'm enjoying it quite a lot. So if you're looking for some 16-bit action, that one's out there.
Cool.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Zach? What are you playing?
I've been playing a game called Butt Blade, the anthropomorphic blade who's also a butt but is a man as well. No, I'm just
kidding.
That is not
true.
I've only been playing the Wonderful 101 here and there, and I've actually been kind of slowing down. I burnt out. I played an obscene amount of Animal Crossing, followed by a ludicrous amount of Final Fantasy VII, followed by an absolutely ridiculous amount of Final Fantasy XV. So I kind of burn out on games, and I've been picking up the controller and playing a level of Wonderful 101 here and there, but have mostly been taking a pretty easy time on games and doing some other stuff during this quarantine time.
Yeah.
Have you played Picross?
No, I have not. At this point, I'm just not playing it just to spite you, Pear.
Picross S4 is amazing. Also, Travel Mosaics 3 is out, or almost out. You got to play that too.
What? The Travel Mosaics 3?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sign me up.
All right, Tom. So you just said you're playing so much stuff.
Yeah, that's the answer. By the way, there's a someone with a leaf blower has decided to be leaf blowing outside my house. So if it gets too loud, please let me know. As Pear taunts Zach with Picross. I've been playing just a bunch of different stuff. I've been playing Persona 5 Royal still on PS5, but in terms of what's on Switch, I've been playing a lot of golf with your friends with some friends, and then I've also been playing. I dip back hard into Worms WMD, which is the most recent Worms game, and is still on Switch and is still so incredibly good. A game for both local or online co-op is just like one of the best party games you can probably play. Worms WMD is just the top one for me.
Yeah, Worms is one of those games that we always bring out when people come to visit us who don't regularly play games at home. They don't have their own consoles, like extended family. Whenever they hear, somehow we end up in Worms, and it's just so much fun.
I also finally tried, which I took me a long time to want to jump on this, but I tried One Step from Eden, which is a Humble published game. So disclosure there, but that game is really weird and cool.
It's really hard. That game is so hard.
Extremely hard. Weird mix of like Mega Man Battle Network meets a roguelike FTL style game is like very weird and cool.
And deck building. It's a lot of stuff.
I try not to mention that though, because then people will stop paying attention.
Yeah. Okay. It's not, it's more action-y than deck building.
Yeah. Is that the sloth exactly from Zootopia? Did they just rip off sloth from Zootopia?
Remember we talked about that? There's a Travel Mosaics 2 that looks like Zootopia. Yeah. This is the third one, and it still looks like Zootopia.
The same
and
slot.
It's a really, really good Picross game. Don't ignore it.
Look what
Zach,
I did.
Oh, you got it. Zach is showing that he actually has Picross S4. Did you just buy it?
I just bought it right now because you're bullying me.
There we go. Oh, all right.
Hold on.
Next week, we'll talk about
Picross from Jupiter.
But we are just about out of time. But before I sign off, I will just let you guys know I've been playing DDR because games that you can play with your feet are few and far between. So I got a DDR mat, and maybe I'll get one for the Switch so I can play Cadence of Hyrule with my feet because I can't play with my hands. Zach, stop making that face. It's not. Now on to question block. So this first question comes from Carl Garcia, and he asks, what is the most you've spent on a special edition game, and do you think it's worth spending on, what do you think is worth spending on those? What are some of your favorites?
I'll open it with a downer easy answer, which is like, basically, I never buy special editions.
Same.
It's kind of, like, I don't know, it's just not like... It's very rarely worth this, like the stuff for me, but that's also because I'm not like, I'm already out of space to put things in my house. So
yeah.
I just don't have a ton of desire for that.
That's a good question. I'm trying to remember. I usually don't buy the special editions that come with big statues in them because I'm running out of room. But, you know, I did, like, when it's a Zelda special edition, I usually go for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got the giant, Breath of the Wild box for Switch and all of that. But yeah, I don't go for like the Call of Duty drone and remote control car ones or anything like that.
The refrigerator, yeah. The Call of Duty fridge.
But if somebody had an awesome like Star Wars ship or something enclosed with something.
I like special editions with practical items. Like I think the last special edition I bought, well, I guess I got Monster Hunter World special edition because it came with a soundtrack and a small-ish figure. And I then had a desk to put it on. But the last one I went out to purchase was the Breath of the Wild special edition because it came with the Switch case. And it's like, oh, I will need that for my Switch that I'm getting on the same day. So it was a practical purchase and economical for me.
Yeah, those are the ones I like. But I was showing the you know, the Ubisoft Star Fox R-Wing, of course. That, I think, was the cheapest special edition ever because it got discounted so heavily.
It's like $5.
Also, remember? Yeah. Was that even a special edition? Could you buy it physically on Switch without getting the R-Wing? I don't remember.
Oh, I don't remember. Well, you could get it digitally for sure.
Right.
No, I don't remember either. Also, there were a few special edition Pokemon games that came with like things like pins, like something small that I can stick in a drawer and be happy that I have it, but not actually take up too much space.
Something that I pay extra money for and then I put away and never look at again. That's what I like to get.
There was I still read Penny Arcade, the webcomic, like pretty much 3 times a week. I still really enjoy that comic.
Exact space.
Just wondering where this is going.
No, I think you're the first person that I've heard in a very long time that still reads Penny Arcade.
Oh yeah, big Penny Arcade fan. Yeah. They had a comic like a few weeks ago at this point that said there was a line in it where they're talking about the special editions of Assassin's Creed, and one of them says you should consider the Valhalla edition. It comes with something for your children to throw away when you die. It's like just so nice. Terribly on point.
It's so sassy.
Yeah.
Did you guys buy the Wind Waker HD special edition for Wii U? The one that came with a Ganondorf statue? Yeah. Those go for like $200-$300 now.
What, really? I still have mine.
Yeah, I didn't buy that special edition, but I have that Ganondorf statue.
Oh, how'd you do that? Yeah. Steal it?
He paid $200-$300 for it.
No, I definitely did not.
Something I still have mine in the box.
Kyle O'Connor gave me his special edition statue. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I just noticed my Majora's Mask special edition box has like a scratch on it, and I just got very upset.
It's not $4.
How did this happen? How did this happen? No, it's okay. This next question is from Rowan Beaton, and he says, "What's a good length for a game for you? So, like, how long ideally would your games be?"
20 hours, 25 hours is about where I tap out.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, typically, like, I was talking about this yesterday on News Games and More. Like, I really love open world games. I'm a big fan of the open world genre. And I think I often find myself playing open world games in the same way where, like, I spend the first 15 to 20 hours doing absolutely everything that I see and trying to take, you know, take over everything. And then at about the 20 hour mark, I'm like, all right, let's wrap this up. And then I just storm through the story to get to the end. So like, yeah, I feel like 25 hours, maybe 30 if it's a game that I really love. But yeah, that's about sweet spot for me.
I will say that I like that 20 hour mark as well. But with games like Assassin's Creed Odyssey or Breath of the Wild, I spent north of 100 hours on those games.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Or 80 to 100, or Witcher 3, I'll keep on going. So it really, I value the added depth, and those games, I kind of don't want them to end and want to keep playing, but it is always daunting to start a new game. And I'm like, looking at Persona's re-release now, I'm like, I love Persona 5 so much, but I just can't find the time to play it. And so when I look at Final Fantasy VII Remake, I was a little bit more confident that I would be able to actually play through that game and get the whole story out of it. So it really depends, though, because Animal Crossing is one of those games where you are going to play more than 100 hours no matter what, but it's spread out and it doesn't feel like you have to finish it in a week in order to be able to talk to others or so.
I don't, like, this might be a cop-out of an answer, but my answer for what's a good game length is, like, whatever the mechanics support in my mind. Like I don't fault Sayonara Wild Hearts for being 2 hours in the same way that I don't fault Persona for being 120. Like, I think both of those games felt like the right length that they should be to me. And like, that's what's more important to me, is I'd always rather a game be actually playing to its strengths than adding in filler or cutting out things when, or ending too soon, right? Like, I'd always rather it be whatever feels right for that narrative in that game more than just like hitting a target for the sake of a target. I will agree with Pear though. It is very, very daunting to start 100-hour games.
Yeah. Yep. That's right. Ultimately, that's what keeps me from going back and replaying something like Skyrim or Fallout, or, you know, it's just so daunting to be able to find that time. And
yeah, I
add some Far Cry game. I didn't finish every Far Cry game because of that either. Some of them just get a little bit too big.
Even saying that 25 to 30 hours is like where I want to hang up a game, like, I have over 400 hours easy in Breath of the Wild. Like, I've played some games just, you know, a stupid amount. So,
yeah. Yep.
But on the other side of that coin, like, I said this a lot when they both came out around the same time, but like, Untitled Goose Game only took me like 2 hours, and then Sayonara Wild Hearts took me 2 hours also, but Sayonara Wild Hearts felt like about the right length, whereas Goose Game felt too short to me. Right.
And they were you're right.
Same length, but like, I felt like one kind of left me hanging and the other one felt like it wrapped up nicely. So like, I like short games a lot too. It just is a matter of like, kind of what the game is telling you.
I think your point about liking a game until the mechanics kind of give out is the right metric there, Tom. You know, I think that my tolerance for some stuff in games just runs a little shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Yeah. I tend to like games that I could be done with between 20 to like 40 hours, like maybe 50 if I want to spend a lot of doing random stuff. But I like the ability to spend a lot more time doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I like the choice of like, should I just go finish the story now? Like, am I done? Or should I like stick around and keep doing the side questy stuff? Like Skyrim, you can technically finish the main story in like, what, like 30 hours? Like, if you really tried. But no one does that. No one ever does that. But I like the option to like finish when I'd like.
Sure. Yeah.
But all the time we have left this week. Unfortunately, I have a meeting to go to, but Marshall Gorduk, I did get your email and we have a question. We will answer it next week. It is about Metroid Prime. So stick around next, or come back next week to hear the answer to that question. But thank you everyone so much for listening. Remember, you can listen to MVC every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time. And remember, Nintendo Voice Chat is the only place you can
get the thing.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz, and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.